You know, when you're close to an event, it's much easier, I think, to comprehend, to take in, to be moved, to be affected by the event itself, even though there still may be questions or a shock value involved. But I still think the closer you are to the event, the more it has an effect on us. Now here you and I are, 2,000 some years later, and we're reflecting on an event that happened so long ago. And it's really difficult sometimes to think about, you know, how do we come to faith, especially in a modern world, a world which Jesus didn't walk in the same sense that he walked back then. How is it that you and I come to faith? We're reflecting on 75 years next year of our parish life here. And think back of how long ago, you know, there was four or five priests living in the rectory. You had four or five masses on a weekend, and they all were packed. Now you've got one pathetic soul. And the three little masses we have might fill up half a church. We look around the world and see the same thing going on, not only within Catholicism, but across the board with Christianity. We scratch our heads. It's not about numbers. I'm well aware it's not about numbers. Jesus began with 12, immediately went down to 11. And then if you're a student of history at all, you see that slowly it began to grow because of persecution. And then once the persecution stopped, then you have it enforced upon you by either the king or the emperor. But I don't think you can count them as Christians if you're forced. And even in our own day, more recent history, you think of, you know, people who go to church because mom and dad, you know, give them the guilt trip every time you see them. And as soon as they die, I'm done with church. And we'll come up with all kinds of excuses. But really, and maybe it's not even conscious, but the whole point of doing it was to appease someone else. Again, is that faith? Nah. No more than the emperor making us be Christians would be faith. Faith is something very personal and response to something that you've encountered, a person that you've encountered. Even when you think back of vocations, and we all say, oh, the good old days. Well, you know, the good old days, if you follow a map of vocations, during wartime, when, what's it called? They forced the guys to go? The draft. There was a boom in vocations. Coincidence? I think not. And then as soon as things settle down and the guy starts to think about what he's doing, he realizes, I don't have a call. I was running from something. I was trying to hide. It was a way out. It doesn't sustain. We can't force people to have faith. Then at some point you have to say, some people, once they come to realize what God is all about, they honestly don't want anything to do with them. So let's look at our readings for last weekend and this weekend. Recall, last weekend was the doubting Thomas. So here Jesus just rose from the dead, and the very first thing he does, of course, the tomb scenario. But then he goes to the upper room where they're locked, and he appears, and there's Thomas. And in one sense, Thomas is all of us, isn't he? At some point in our life, maybe not the sustaining part of who we are, but at some point in our life, we all have said, unless someone proves it, I love you. Prove it. I'm with you through this. Prove it. Trust me, you can invest in this product. Prove it. Unless I see the marks in his hands, unless I put my hand in that side, I'm not going to believe. I love Thomas. He's honest. And he has done some serious internal reflection. I'm not going to be swayed by you, the crowd. We already saw that on Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Palm Sunday. The crowd is fickle. Now it's me. I'm going to decide. And unless I have some evidence, And here we have two other disciples. Same day, a little bit later, maybe after brunch, they're walking along to Emmaus. They're prevented from seeing him. You have to say, how is it that Mary Magdalene at the tomb didn't recognize him? How is it that these people loved the guy? They walked with him that we know of for certain 3 years of public ministry, probably longer than that, but definitely the 3 years of public ministry. How would they not recognize him? Well, something has happened to him. He still has his body, but now it's glorified. But more importantly, for our reflection, something's happened to them. And again, you and I are them, aren't we? How often in our life do we not recognize Jesus is right here in our midst? How often is he walking right along with us, whispering things in our ear, and we are prevented from seeing him? That's the question of the week. Lots of things can prevent us from seeing him, from recognizing him, from believing. Like Thomas, all of us at one point have been lied to or misled. And so there's a certain fear of trusting people until we can see the evidence, touch the evidence. It happens with all of us, as I said, at some point. Sometimes it's grief. Grief takes on many different forms. Not all of us are aware that we're grieving certain things. The grieving of the loss of a certain culture, of a certain day and time, of a certain routine and way of doing things. And when we're dislodged from that, there's a certain level of death or grief that comes with a loss of a job. What is it that keeps you from seeing Jesus? Maybe it is the crowd. Maybe it's the people you've hanging around with, yoked yourself with, that they're just pulling you like a dead weight all the time. Maybe it's our busyness. I can't imagine Mary at 14 being able and open to say yes to the Holy Spirit if she lived in our time. She'd have to text, she'd have to go on Twitter, she'd have to YouTube videos. Is this really the angel of God? I mean, it would be so chaotic for her. But she lived in a quiet time, a reflective time. Maybe you and I need to reclaim that in our own lives. How, after all, are we going to hear God? He doesn't shout. He's very soft, very quiet, and very internal. We won't find him on the big screens with lots of colors and displays and loud noise. That's not where he will be found. He made that clear in the Old Testament. He is the still small voice. And as he was in the beginning, he will be now and forever. You think back of the different time periods. Jesus has always been present. We just heard the first reading and the second reading of Jesus being in the Old Testament. Now, of course, he was there in a different way. He took a different form. It was not the incarnation. That would come later. The Old Testament, God chose priests, prophets, and kings for the presence of God. And then ultimately, the tabernacle. There, God was always found. The temple was a great image of God's presence. It doesn't mean God wasn't in the wind, God wasn't in a sunrise or sunset. Certainly he was. But definitively, by his own choice, he would be found in the temple, in that tabernacle. But throughout the whole Old Testament, which is what Jesus is articulating here with these two, he's telling them where he was. I was the rock that Moses struck and water gushed out of. What do you mean you were a rock? Well, you know, I identified as a rock. I'm here all week. No, that'll come 2,000 years later when we don't know what is up and what is down. And our world is whatever we say it is. Nope, Jesus was the rock. Jesus was the manna. My Father provides the living bread from heaven. Then we go to the incarnation, Christmas. Jesus coming into the flesh, very clearly, very definitively, this is now God's presence in our world, but for a very short time. You think of all of history, it's not over yet, 33 years, God walked the earth in skin. What is he thinking? Why couldn't it have been longer? Why couldn't it have been in our day? But priests, prophets, and kings, the incarnation, very short time. And then all of a sudden, he leaves us abandoned, right? God is no longer to be found anywhere in our world today. Nope, that was it. After he ascended to the right hand of the Father, no more God. Is that true? Or did God have a plan? God had a plan from the very beginning. And it is a sacramental life. The whole Old Testament is filled with sacraments. Visible signs of invisible reality. That rock that gushed forth water, that's baptism. The man in the desert is the breaking of the bread. How many of us are prevented from seeing it because we don't know our scriptures? Very important for us. Take time. Jesus lays it all out. I will not leave you orphan. I was with the people of Israel. I came in the flesh, and I will be with you in the new Israel, the church. Was the old Israel perfect? No, and it still isn't. Is the church perfect? Are you perfect? Until you're perfect, the church is imperfect. But God is still working. This is his chosen vehicle. I don't know why. I would have picked something better, something more stable, something more easily identified. It's not what he chose. He chose Judas. He chose Peter, Andrew, James, John. And now he comes to us through sacraments that are clearly defined, unlike in the Old Testament, which were foggy sacraments, alluded to, certainly. But then Jesus spells it out. Whose sins you forgive are forgiven them. Whose sins you retain are retained. This is my body. This is my blood. Unless you eat it, you have no life in me. My body is real food. My blood is real drink. What is it that prevents you from seeing Jesus? Sometimes, let's be honest, it's our expectations. I think more often than not, that's what it is. That we want something from God, that we have a mindset that it should be this way. So remember, again, prior to the incarnation, they imagined that God would enter the world on a white horse to take down the civil powers. And when little old Jesus comes along with his sandals and long hair, they said, hippie, this isn't him. Wasn't it? It was. A baby? That's God? Sorry. We want this. No, this is the way God's going to do it. What about us? Do we think God has come into our world, into our lives, to eliminate our problems? To make us rich? You see, a lot of people still think this. That's why these TV people who are all about prosperity gospel have mega churches. It's a revolving door because there's no roots, and it's a lie. God didn't come to make you materially rich. But if that's your expectation, you're going to be like these two, walking along complaining, we didn't see him. He's right here. What is it that prevents you, personally me, from seeing him? What expectations do you have of God that he's not fulfilling? God came among us as Emmanuel. God is with us. He is with us on this pilgrim journey. Well, I don't need another friend. Sorry. That's how God is presenting himself. Well, then I want nothing to do with it because friendships are difficult and they take time. I want a genie out of a bottle who will do whatever I tell him. Wrong God. Go back to Rome. You won't find him here. Go back to Athens. Look at all the false gods of old. If you can create them, it's not God. If you can dictate, that's not God. God is here with us. God is here with us in the beginning, when we struggle, when we celebrate, when we're hanging on a cross, God is with us. Why won't he remove it? You'll have to ask him. I don't know. But he's with us. That's the God that is being revealed to us today. Will we recognize him in the breaking of the bread? What is it that keeps us from recognizing Jesus in our midst?